I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You know, I think all the talk about Bill possibly being fired if they lose this game, I think is utterly ridiculous. Now, we did talk in the last podcast about, like, I think the only possible outcome where Bill doesn't have his job after this week is if he just takes one for the team, takes one for his people, and says, I've always done what's in the best interest of this team and my players. And right now, the way this team is playing, the best thing is for me to step aside and let Jerod take over and see what he can do for the rest of the season. That's the only scenario. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think the crafts are just, things are best left unsaid. If you don't have anything good to say, don't say it at all. And just let the season play out and then, make your moves.
The Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network.
He's Greg. I'm Nick. We have more Patriots issues to discuss. Not too surprised by this. We'll get into it in a minute, but first, this episode is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. And right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 moneyline bet. And, of course, our friends Odds Are, an app that combines AI and machine learning to suggest smart sports bets. All right, Greg, J.C. Jackson's been left at home. He's not making the trip to Germany. Jack Jones was also benched against the Commanders for a little bit, both guys causing some issues. Your thoughts?
Not a good place to be, obviously. I think this is emblematic of, lost teams or losing teams, and that's where the Patriots are. There's a sort of a lot to dive into with, Bill Belichick denies after the game that they're being benched. Mike Pellegrino goes on with the media and says that, instead of talking about who wasn't out there, talk about who was out there and Sean Wade and what a great job he's done and all this stuff. And okay. Fine. Okay, coach. Then why did he only play 13 snaps? If he was the best cornerback for the team, why didn't he play more? Why did those guys come in and take his snaps? I mean, it's starting to look like a clown show down there, and it's disappointing. And, from what I hear, and look, this is, I'm not reporting anything, I'm just sort of, for the sake of conversation, and this is a podcast, I wouldn't write something like this, but just there are a lot of rumblings that this is sort of the, I guess, how would I term it? This is sort of the tip of the iceberg with what's going on in the secondary room, that there might be more coming out in the next day or so about either or J.C. Jackson and Jack Jones and what's going on in the DB room, that Jack Jones hasn't been spotted at practice. That's pretty suspect. You would think, I'm just going off of my history covering the league, and I'm not reporting anything. This is pure speculation and just my gut feeling from watching this from afar, that there could be some sort of suspension coming, whether that's gambling or PEDs or, an internal suspension from something that happened with the team. I mean, that Jack Jones at least is with the team and practicing. So that, I guess, is good on his part, but that JC's not anywhere to be found. I don't know. That's kind of sketchy. I mean, even if he was hanging back, wouldn't he be practicing? And so, I think there are a lot of things going on, and you're just fearful that, more could be coming and how that's going to reflect on Bill Belichick and all that stuff. This is what happens when you're 2-7. If they were 7-2, nobody would be hearing about this stuff. Nobody would really care about this stuff. But when you're 2-7, this is the stuff that gets talked about.
It speaks to the desperation of Belichick trying to win games right now. The fact that both of these guys played last weekend. Just desperate. He knows. He doesn't want Sean Wade out there playing the whole game. He doesn't want to elevate somebody from the practice squad with all the issues in the defensive backs right now. It's a desperate team. It's a desperate coach who's trying to get every win he can to get closer to Shula. Inconsistencies too, Greg. How in the world can you look Pop Douglas in the eyes after you benched him because you tried to make a play against Miami and then you put him in mothballs for a few weeks? How can you do that to that guy who has seemingly done everything right away from the field, on the practice field? You bench him and you treat him like he's a joke because of the fumble against Miami, but here you are playing both Jackson and Jones after these guys seemingly don't give an ish about anything. It's a lack of consistency from the head coach and a lack of accountability. He goes up to the podium last week. He had an opportunity. I'm not looking for him to bury his players, but he could have sent a message. Instead, he defended him. And he did the same old Belichick. So,
Nick, to further your point and sort of illustrate like how these things, these quote-unquote minor things, become big issues on the team, you know, what if you're Adrian Phillips on this team, who is a veteran, played a lot of good football in this league for this team? He could barely get on the field. Jalen Mills, all right, he doesn't have quite the esteemed history that Adrian Phillips does, but the same sort of guy, a well-respected veteran player, has been around, doesn't have much of a role on this team, can't get on the field, yet Jack Wagon 1 and Jack Wagon 2 can do whatever the hell they want, and they get on the field and play like, you know, 40, 50 snaps. You know, if I'm Adrian Phillips and I'm Jalen Mills, I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? Like, what is the point of this? And that's when dissension in the ranks, like, you know, guys start talking amongst themselves, like, what are we doing here? Why are we putting in the work? You know, this, the old man doesn't know what the hell he's doing anymore. Like, that, this is the stuff you're talking about. This is the stuff when you're inconsistent and especially treat, you know, younger talent, quote unquote, talented players this way, but you screw over veterans who are there every day, do everything. Remember that first year that Adrian was in New England, and he basically had to play sub linebacker because they had no linebackers, and the dude used to get pummeled by tackles and guards every single game, yet he was always out there doing his job. And, you know, he does those things for this team, and he doesn't get rewarded for it. And then these guys who are obviously aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing in a variety of ways for multiple years get treated like this. It's just, it's not right.
And you're setting a precedent. Like the other guys in the room, they're looking at this and they're saying, all right, if those guys aren't going to be held totally accountable, if they're going to do what they did and they still play against Washington, then why do I have to be a goody two-shoes? Why do I have to do everything the coach asks me to do? Those guys aren't doing it. Now, I'm not saying a lot of those guys in the locker room will do that. They're professionals, right? The vast majority of this locker room gets it. But it just sets a precedent. It's so bad. It's so bad on so many levels. And it begs the question, Greg, of how many yes men are surrounding Belichick? There's no checks and balances. He does whatever he wants to do. And, you know, I'm sure not everybody agreed with Jackson and Jones playing last weekend. How could you? But it doesn't matter because Belichick's got say. And we know the owner's not stepping in the middle of the season with football matters. He didn't step in during the deadline. And you ended up holding on to Josh Uche instead of getting a fifth round pick when the guy played 20% of the snaps. So Kraft's not stepping in. The Bill Belichick bubble, it is solidified in New England. He's got sons and former players on his staff. They're not going to step up and challenge him. He's going to do what he wants to do. And he's a guy who's absolutely desperate to win every game he can right now for a 2-7 football team. Adrian Clem is one of those coaches, Greg. Not with the team. Sounds like a health situation as far as what Belichick shared yesterday.
Yeah. A couple of thoughts on this. You know, if Belichick wasn't caught in a lie this weekend with the Jones and Jackson conversation, you'd just be like, okay, you know, it's definitely a health issue. You know, I'm guessing that it is. You know, it's just, you know, when you don't tell the truth on something, then it snowballs. Now you're like, well, if you protected these guys, now, you know, what is he doing? Is he doing that with Clem? We don't know. You know, hopefully Adrian Clem is doing okay. But you also have to put in, you also, you know, in this situation, you have to factor in his past. And, you know, given that Belichick didn't tell the truth on Jones and Jackson, and given that Adrian Clem didn't last the season in Pittsburgh, that when it became clear to him that he wasn't going to be brought back the next year by Mike Tomlin, he started looking at other jobs around this time last when he was with the Steelers. You know, I have no insight on this. I think it's fair to bring up just, you know, with the way the offensive line has gone, maybe Clem's looking at this like, you know, it looks like Bill's going to be out of the job. He brought me in here. I don't know what my future is, you know, what have you. Look, it's probably a legit excuse, but, you know, when people have certain histories, you have to bring it up. And until it's ruled out, you know, it's sort of there.
I would hope that Belichick's not using health as some kind of a crutch to get out of it. That would be brutal. So hopefully he's not doing that, and hopefully Clem's okay. I will say it'd be weird timing if it was Clem looking elsewhere or something like that, because the offensive line's actually played a bit better the last 2 weeks since Owenu slid the right tackle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe Clem's getting him going a little bit. Patriots in Germany, obviously on Sunday morning, Greg, a high profile game for the league, only game on at 9:30 in the morning. Last time I checked. It begs the question, though, Robert Kraft, Jonathan Kraft, especially after what we saw the video, you know, all the posts about what Jonathan said to his father in the suite. Do you think the Krafts will be visible this weekend, or will they kind of hide in the shadows out there in Germany and enjoy some brats and Marzens?
See, to me, Nick, that's the most interesting thing about this whole trip game. You know, who the hell cares? 2-7 Patriots against the Colts. I mean, you know, nobody really cares. To me, the most interesting aspect of it is, like, I'm sure you'll agree that if the Patriots were 7-2, first place in the AFC East, still the Patriots, you know, Robert would be all over the place, you know, on NFL Network, talking to the fans, like, you know, all over the place pregame, glad handing with everybody. You know he would be doing that. He would be just taking his victory lap. Now at 2-7, with an embattled coach, a team in a terrible spot, a lot of questions about the future. How many they've won one home game against the Bills. Otherwise, they've lost. They've gotten blown out at home. You know, I could see the Krafts keeping a very low profile. I'll be very interested to see if Kraft goes on NFL Network or one of those pregame things this week. Normally he would. And if he does, how does he answer the questions? Because those people, sorry, NFL Network, you have to do your job. You have to ask the question about where the team is, you know, about, like, you know, Bill Belichick's future. Is it secure? You know, you have to ask those questions. And so, to me, that's the most interesting aspect of all this, is how visible are the Krafts and what do they say if questions get put to them?
It'll be fascinating. Of course, they haven't said a lot during the year when they've had the opportunity to. Even at certain points when Kraft usually would speak, he hasn't really spoken. So I don't think you'll see a lot of Kraft on TV this Sunday if he has a say-so. But we'll see.
Well, Nick, would you take that as a – so if that happens, if Kraft keeps a low profile, doesn't answer any questions, isn't that visible, what does that say to you?
I think it could say a couple things. I think it could say that he's just embarrassed about where the team is at right now and would rather just not talk about it. I'd also say that is the very opposite of the vote of confidence in Bill Belichick. You know, if he was steadfast in keeping Belichick and confident in this program, then he would go out there and say, yeah, you know, it's not great this season right now, but we feel pretty good about things and where we're at. The fact that he's not speaking to the media, not showing his face an awful lot, would tell me that he's probably stewing about what's going on and is going to say to himself, you know what, some things are better left unsaid, especially during the season. Yep. I'm going to let this puppy lie. And then when the season's over, we're gonna cut the cord. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's – if he doesn't say anything, it's just like, you know, us answering – there's no way they're going to win answering the questions at this point. Like, you know, what – you know, any way he says it, if he just comes out and says, look, you know, we're disappointed, but there's still, you know, how many games left? 8 games left in the season. And, you know, we're looking to see some improvement or something like that. That's going to piss off the fans. Yep. You know, if he takes a harder line, then that's going to irritate Belichick. And, you know, look, I think all the talk about Bill possibly being fired if they lose this game, I think is utterly ridiculous. Now, we did talk in the last podcast about, like, I think the only possible outcome where Bill doesn't have his job after this week is if he just takes one for the team, takes one for his people, and says, I've always done what's in the best interest of this team and my players. And right now, the way this team is playing, the best thing is for me to step aside and let Gerard take over and see what he can do for the rest of the season. That's the only scenario. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think the crafts are just things are best left unsaid. If you don't have anything good to say, don't say it at all and just let the season play out and then, you know, make your moves.
Score early this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 money bet. That's $150 if your team wins. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action, NFL. The app is so easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options, including you got spreads, you got your player props, you got over-unders, and more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and kick off the NFL season. FanDuel, official partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in Massachusetts. Hope is here. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame money line wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
All right, Greg, let's talk about some mid-season awards. Pretty difficult to pick some of these given they're 2-7, but let's roll with it. Let's start with the offense. Offensive MVP.
Okay, so I have crunched my numbers. This is all mostly based on my film evaluation. And so for offensive MVP, not a whole lot to pick through. you know, I would say that, you know, guys who were nominees for this, would be Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, Trent Brown, David Andrews. I'm going with David Andrews. I think on a per snap basis this season, he's been the most consistent and best offensive player, the least amount of mental mistakes. He was put in a terrible position to start this year, basically being between, you know, two rookies and everything else that was going on the offensive line and the constant changes. And while, you know, the popular opinion around among NFL scouts, which puzzles me a little bit, but I've heard it so often that I have to listen to it, is that they think he's slowing down. But I'm sorry, I think he's still a really good player for this team. And given the circumstances, I think he's been really good for this team.
I haven't crunched many numbers. I haven't watched the All-22. I'm going with Kendrick Bourne. I had a feeling you might go with David Andrews. I'm going to go with Kendrick Bourne before the injury. I thought he was producing. He's not consistent all the time with the route running. We've talked about that. But this is somebody who I want to give him credit. You know, it sucks that his year ended the way it did, because this is somebody who didn't have a good year last year. He took accountability. He talked about some of the things that he had to straighten out, especially off the field. And he came in this year ready and prepared. and practiced hard and played pretty well. So I give a lot of credit to Kendrick Bourne. He didn't tap out. He didn't whine. He came back and he played well. All right. Offensive least valuable player, Greg.
Vedarian Lowe. you know, I feel bad for him. He was put in a bad position, you know, late add in camp. Didn't get much, you know, didn't have much practice time. But, I mean, at this point, he's played, let's see, you know, 317 snaps. He leads the team by far, even though Antonio Maffey's not far off. 24 total quarterback pressures allowed, including 4 sacks, 6.5 run stuffs. In my ratings, he's a minus 14%, which is down near, certainly the on the bottom for the offensive line. You know, put in a bad position, but, you know, look, he was not good when he was out there.
I'll go with Captain Fingertips, Devontae Parker. Sweet extension, Bill. Sweet extension, bro. Offensive surprise, Greg.
Farrell Brown. I think that he's done a really nice job, you know, blocking occasional big plays. He looks like a prototypical number two tight end, a guy who was added extremely late, but, you know, fit in rather easily. I've been I was a little perplexed that he didn't have much of a role this past week, you know, but I think he's been a really good player for them.
Michael Wenu, I look at this differently. Surprise in the idea that he actually was moved, that Bill acquiesced and moved him to right tackle. And he's played pretty well there. And I know we'll get into this discussion much later on, Greg, but I'm the Patriots. I'm keeping him at right tackle. I'm paying him this offseason. Yep. And I'm going into next year with Michael Wenu at my right tackle. And if I can get Trent Brown on incentive-laden deal, I bring him back and I draft a young tackle. That's my offensive tackle plan. A Wenu, Brown, and a young guy maybe out of the second round, depending on what you do in the first. That's what I would do. So Owenu, the fact that they actually played him at right tackle, and sounds like they're going to keep him there. All right, offensive disappointment.
Mac Jones, you know, he just he has not played good football this year. He has, especially of late, outside of the fourth quarter against Buffalo, which ended up pulling up his final grade to a positive. Before that, the first three quarters, he was a negative. I mean, he's just been what's interesting is that it has actually improved. Now, I was very frustrated with him this past weekend, but, you know, Dallas was the worst. The Saints wasn't much better. Vegas was a little bit better. Of course, he had the fourth quarter against Buffalo. Miami was a little bit better than Vegas. And then Washington was a little bit better than Miami. So I guess he is getting a little bit better, but overall, he just has not played winning football over the last 6 weeks for the most part.
Ramondre Stevenson's first 6 weeks. Last 2-3 weeks, he's looked like a different guy. He's had that. I don't know if there was an injury situation. Of course, it really wasn't popping up on the report. But, you know, I think the last 2 or 3 weeks, he has shown more juice. He's had better finish to his runs. Even last week as a receiver, looked like he had a little bit more going on there. So, but the first 6 weeks, I was very disappointed. I think Ramondre is a very talented guy, and I was disappointed the way he looked. Most improved?
Kendrick Bourne. Not that I think he's all that different than he was his first year here, but considering where he was last year, you know, under Matt Patricia, basically in the doghouse, couldn't get on the field. You know, when he was on the field, he was pressing a little bit. You know, the difference to this year has been immense, and as you illustrated earlier, he's been a really good player for this team. So he's my most improved.
I'll stick with Bourne as well. Least improved.
Least improved. Tyquan Thornton. yeah, I don't even know what to say about him. Like, you know, I know he's missed a lot of practice time, but can't you, like, learn by watching film or watching practice? Like, you know, can't you still get better? Like, why is he still in the same place? I mean, I know practice is important and being out there and, you know, seeing what you're doing on film and then making corrections. I understand that. But, I mean, this guy is nowhere right now, Nick.
Somebody tweeted at me. I wish I had their handle. I laughed out loud when I saw it. I think they called him Twinkle Toes. I got Twinkle Toes Taekwon too, with the little tap dance, Michael Flatley river dance route that he ran last week.
At the top of that route last week? Oh, yeah. That was something.
What a joke.
What if there was an app that used AI and machine learning to suggest smart sports bets? There is, and it's called Odds Are. It is a mobile app you need to know what bets of the day are smart ones. Download the app, sign up for an account, and let the latest data analysis guide you through today's point spreads, money lines, and over-unders. I just did it. It's easy. If you see green, that's a smart bet. If you see yellow, you're on your own. If you see red, don't do it. Odds Are doesn't take your bet. It makes you better at it. With Odds Are on your mobile phone, you're a tap away from making a smart play. It's smart betting made simple. Find Odds Are app in the App Store or on Google Play. Get a 2 free week trial. It's just $10 a month after that. But hey, listen to that. That's for the usual people, the normal people. Listeners to this podcast, the Greg Bedard Patriots podcast, you actually get a special deal. Get your first 30 days of the app free. Just go to oddsr.com/Bedard to download the app. That's oddsr.com/Bedard. 30 days of smarter betting free. We'd call that a winning bet. The casinos and sportsbook want you to bet. Odds Are wants you to win. Go get it.
All right, so that was the offense. It was tough. Not much better the defense lately. But let's go to the defensive side of the football, Greg. Your defensive MVP.
So this is might be a little bit of a surprise, but Matthew Judon is still my highest rated defensive player on the team. Christian Barmore was certainly in the conversation, and I considered him. But I just think they've really missed Matthew Judon's finishing touch as far as pass rush. They've had to blitz a lot more when he's been out. That has stressed the secondary. They've given up a lot of big plays the past couple weeks, which has really ended up costing them in these games. So to me, even with the amount of time that he's missed, and I think it's illustrated it, Matthew Judon is the most valuable player on this defense.
I'm going Barmore. He's becoming a beast in front of our eyes. Barmore, Duggar, and Gonzalez are the three guys I would say are the future of this defense. And start working around with those three, the middle. Put Duggar back in the box. Stop with the free safety plan, which is just a disaster. You know, put Duggar where he's the strongest. Extend him. Get Barmore an extension. Get that done early. And bring back Christian Gonzalez healthy next year. And at least you have three young guys who, and I know Duggar's not that young, but three younger guys who can give you at least some hope defensively moving into next season. Defensive least valuable player.
J.C. Jackson. Yep. He's been really bad since he's been back. I mean, some of it's been good, you know, but the way I grade Nick is like it's hard for, you know, most of the time I don't give a plus or a minus for defensive back, like unless they're involved in the play. So they're, you know, minuses, their pluses and minuses are always less than any other position. You know, there will be the occasion when I think like the quarterback wants to go to the guy in his first read, but he's well covered. I give them plus. He ends up throwing at somebody else. But, you know, to put it in perspective, so, you know, he's played basically like half the snaps of, you know, most people in the secondary. I have him at this point for 3+ plays, 15.5 negative plays. To put that in perspective, you know, Miles Bryant, who everybody loves to kill, has 10+ plays and 10- plays. J.C. Jackson's been bad. He deserves to be benched. He deserves to be sent home. He deserves to be cut, you know, frankly. And, you know, like you illustrated before, you know, the only reason that he and Jack Jones are even out there is because Christian Gonzalez is hurt, Marcus Jones is hurt, and they have nobody else out there. And they don't want to put Sean Wade out there, no matter what Pellegrino has to say. And so, to me, it's tough because he's just got here and he hasn't played a ton, but he has not been good.
Yeah, I had Jackson down as my guy too. And when the trade was made, I really liked it. I said, look, if you could get like 80% of what JC was the last time he was here, it's an obvious upgrade over Sean Wade. And he's still probably an upgrade over Sean Wade. But I thought, you know, low risk, high reward. Well, apparently not. I mean, the risk, this guy kind of, I don't want to say ruining the locker room because that's way too strong, but being the problem he is being, there is some risk to that. More risk than I thought. I thought this guy would look at it and say, man, I sucked with the Chargers. Yeah, maybe I feel like I was misused, but I have some pride on the line here, and I want to continue to play the football and prove to people that I'm not that guy. And it hasn't worked out that way. Defensive surprise, Greg.
Defensive surprise. Keon White. Now, look, we were both high on him after his preseason and training camp. We knew he looked really good. We just wondered how much playing time he was going to get, and which really held in the early part of the season until Judon went down. So he's gotten the opportunity to play more standing up on the edge. That was something that we weren't quite sure about either. You know, he played with his hand in the dirt a lot in college. So the combination of him playing from a two-point stance, getting more frontline edge reps, I think he's done really well with them. I mean, he hasn't been a complete beast on the edge, and sometimes he's gotten his butt whooped. But, you know, that happens as a rookie. Life comes at you fast when you're in the NFL. But he's a smart kid. He cares a lot. He's going to learn. But I've been surprised at how effective he's been. And I will say this. The other thing is his mental errors aren't very much. They're very minimal. And so I think he's done a really good job.
Yeah, I screwed the pooch. I have to add Keon White to the other guys that I talked about just a moment ago. You know, Duggar, Gonzalez, the younger guys, that young Barmore. You can add White onto that list of young defensive players that should have you excited. So, he's been good. My surprise is the secondary and just how bad it's been. Even without, like, I know Gonzalez isn't there. I get it. But last year, this defensive backfield wasn't giving up chunk play after chunk play after chunk play. And Gonzalez was at college. So just how bad they are back there. It just... missed assignments, coverage busts, bad tackling. It's just not good. Defensive disappointment.
Josh Uche. He's in a contract year. Plenty of reps against the pass. I think I have him for 7 total quarterback pressures at this point. Just not anywhere good enough, anywhere near good enough. He needs to be more impactful. You know, he's just running by the quarterback or just running up the field more often than not. And so to me, I figured in a contract year, he'd be a complete beast this year. Hasn't happened.
Yeah, I'm with you on Uche. I'll give you another one, just the free safety position. This will go down in the line of Belichick not figuring out how to handle a position when somebody leaves. It goes back to the Gronk tight end days. It goes back to, the right tackle situation. It goes back to quarterback. This idea of we'll replace Devin McCourty with pretty much just a bunch of people and throw them against the wall and see who sticks hasn't worked out. Most improved.
Most improved. Christian Barmore. Not that what he's doing was not expected. It's just, where he was last year, and he lost a lot of time last year as we've illustrated in the past. When he did come back at the end of the year, he actually played a lot better than people, understood. So to me, where he was last year and to where he is now, especially where he's the way he's played over the last 5 or 6 weeks, I think he's been vastly improved and is becoming the player that we figured he would become.
Anthony Jennings, he went from a guy who wasn't really part of the plan at all, going through injuries and stuff like that. And since Judon's injury, he's done a pretty good job. He's accounted well for himself, plays the edge well. So I'll give Jennings some credit there. Least improved.
Kyle Duggar.
Yep.
In my ratings to this point, he is dead even. Same number of plus plays, same number of minus plays. He is tied for the most big plays allowed. I think he's given up the most touchdowns with three. I'm sorry if, and this is the same conversation we've had for years about Kyle Duggar. He is extremely talented. Do I think he's been put in the best position to succeed by this coaching staff? No, especially with the whole free safety stuff that you brought up. You know, having him back there, like, he should just be a box safety. He should be their Jamal Adams. And they're just not doing that enough. If they did that, he would impact more games, but they're not doing it. So it's not all his fault. But the bottom line is, he's not playing winning football often enough. You know, he needs to be on the plus side a lot more. And he's just not. He's just sort of, as many plays as he makes, he gives up. And it's been the same way throughout his entire career. He's 27 going on 28. Like, it needs to be better. So to me, he's the same exact player he's always been. So to me, he's the least improved.
Yeah, he was on my list as well. He was my guy. And I know I just said that he should be a part of the field. I still feel that way. But as Greg said, make him a box safety. You know, put him out there to do what he does best. It's kind of similar like Marte Mapu. You draft Mapu in the third round. Mm-hmm. He played in the box at Sacramento State. Why are we not trying to play that guy as an athletic linebacker on the second level? You're throwing him out there free safety and playing him in the back end where he's giving up big plays 2 weeks in a row. I don't get so much about what they're doing right now. With that said, just kind of your overall thoughts on the program here at the halfway point.
So two things I wanted to bring up and sort of, you know, ask you as well. So you basically, like, what's the thing that you're most optimistic about with this team? And it's a tough question. I find myself going back and forth, but my first, and this is going to seem strange considering what we started off this podcast talking about and what we've talked about sort of sporadically in this podcast. I actually feel okay about the cornerbacks. Now, hold on. you know, so let's just, mostly it's about Christian Gonzalez. Like, I think they hit a complete home run with that kid. I think he's unbelievable. I gave thought to giving him defensive MVP for how good he was early on in the season and how things have sort of fallen apart. I think, you know, with Christian Gonzalez, with Jonathan Jones, and I'm just going to leave JC Jackson and Jack Jones off to the side for a second, but just Gonzalez, Jonathan Jones, and Marcus Jones. Now, Marcus Jones, before he got hurt, wasn't doing that great, but I have confidence in the kid. I think he has a lot of skill. I think he can get there. Is he getting the right coaching? I don't know. But I will say, just because of Christian Gonzalez, I feel a lot better about their future at the cornerback position than I did going into this year. And if they could somehow get JC Jackson and Jack Jones on the reservation, which I am not optimistic about very much. I would rather see those guys gone, you know, bring in another cornerback to sort of bring up that depth in the offseason. But with Christian Gonzalez, I feel good about their cornerback position for now.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The makings of a pretty good, talented defensive line, rather. The idea of Keon White, he continues to develop and improve. Just him and Barmore both playing significant snaps on that defensive line. Judon coming back from the injury. We'll see how they handle his contract situation. But, you know, Judon coming back, even somebody like Jennings, who has proved that he can be a rotational guy on the edge. You know, you go out and you find another pass rusher who can play the edge better than Uche, you know, via the draft or free agency, your defensive line isn't looking too bad. So I think they've got some pieces there that they could work with. And also Pop Douglas. I mean, I think we should all be optimistic about Pop, given the situation, you know, what he's been dealing with. I think he has shown some of that potential that everybody was discussing in the preseason and during camp. And you already mentioned Gonzalez. He stays healthy. He's a stud. Biggest frustration?
Well, I mean, there's so many things with this, so many things with this team. But
get a list.
Look, you have to look at the let's just start with I would say the offense, just overall, just the future of the offense. Like, what's the future? What are the building blocks as far as the offense? Like, maybe interior offensive line? I mean, because look at it. You know, say Trent Brown and Michael Wenu are playing well at tackle this year. They're both free agents. They both could be gone. There's no tight ends. Not even Farrell Brown are under contract for next year. They could be gone. Kendrick Bourne, who's your best wide receiver, is a free agent. You know, you got Devontae Parker and Juju Smith-Schuster. Wonderful. You know, at the position. And then, of course, you know, there's Mac Jones, who, you know, has improved slightly over the last 6 weeks, but it's been like, you know, incremental. And so it's, you know, a lot of people have wondered, you know, and Nick, I'm sure you get this a lot too. You know, people are just like, you know, I'm asked on either Felger or Maz or on TV last night, like, are you out on Mac Jones? And I haven't said that I'm totally out yet. And people will get, why don't you say, what are you waiting for? Like, you know, because first of all, I care about the opinion I put out there. Like, I'm not a talk show host that I can just say one thing one day and then it's proven to be the opposite the next day and just everything just keeps going. Like, you know, I don't say anything until I'm reasonably sure. And I've seen things happen in the NFL where, you know, right now, Mac Jones, and I don't know the reason for it. You know, you could talk to different people around the NFL, around this team. They will have different opinions on why, you know, Mac Jones's career has gone the way it's gone. You know, there's the whole Matt Patricia stuff last year. There's his attitude. There's this, there's that. All I could tell you is that the promise in terms of his mind and decision-making has evaporated. It's like his wiring got screwed up. Now, do I know it was always there at the beginning? No, I don't, because I know Josh McDaniels stage managed him very tightly that first year, probably more than people realize. And so was he ever going to be able to take off the training wheels fully and become a fully formed quarterback? I can't tell you that. All I can tell you is where he is right now, and that is he's all messed up in the head. He's not reading out plays. He's not sticking with plays. He's not delivering the ball where he should. He's not doing the things that I've seen him do at times during his career, and that's where he is right now. But that's not to say that, you know, this week against the Colts, for whatever reason, the light could go on. It happens. It happens in the NFL. So I'm not going to completely write him off, but I do think if it doesn't get appreciably better this week against the Colts, yes, I think his job is on the line. Yes, I think his future in New England is on the line, but I'm not ready to say I'm totally out on him. But just, you know, in general, the thing I'm most frustrated about is that because of Bill's attitude towards offense, this team is nowhere on offense. They have no future. They have no present. And it's all because of Bill and his attitude towards offense. And it looks even more outdated in today's game. So I guess my biggest frustration is with Belichick and offense and how he's left this team with no future on that side of the ball.
My biggest frustration is they stink. That's it. They stink. 2-7. As far as I talked about this on my podcast yesterday, the Nick Cattle Show, if you want to check it out. And thanks to everybody who has subscribed and followed the show, jumping from here to there to keep an eye on my solo stuff as well. I appreciate it. But, you know, I talked about, I'll give you the gist. I don't think this quarterback plan is really that difficult to figure out. I don't think this is rocket science. Mac Jones has not earned the job to be QB1 next year. Nobody would say that he has. You have to earn that position, right? If you have a top three pick, a top five pick, and you think you can get a generational quarterback, somebody who would be seen as a top eight QB at the NFL level, you can't pass that guy up. The only way you can pass that kind of guy up is if you have somebody who already is a top five to eight quarterback in the league. So if you're sitting there in the top three and Drake May's there, you run the card up to the podium. This isn't difficult. If you think mm-hmm. that generational quarterback's available. If you don't have a shot at one of those guys, and we talk about that next tier of quarterbacks, then you pick one of those guys, you bring them in next year, and you have a competition between them and Mac. You spend a third-round pick or a fourth-round pick on a rookie quarterback like you did on Zappe. You missed on Zappe. Belichick hopefully is not picking the next guy in that third or fourth round. You bring that guy in. Maybe you even sign a veteran quarterback. And you have a quarterback competition in camp next year. And that way, you bring in more talent offensively. You have, whether it's Bill O'Brien coming back or a new offensive mind, however all of that shakes out, you then start and say, we've got Mac under $3 million. We've got a middle round, young, projectable, possible starting quarterback. And we've got this veteran guy who's kind of hung around. Let's see who plays the best. Whoever plays the best starts week one. That to me is what you do. You don't reach for a quarterback. You don't scramble for a quarterback. If you're in position to land one of those guys, you land one of those dudes. And you say, okay, we're going to move on from Mac now. You can even try to have a competition and let the new, you know, that young dude win the job in camp if you'd like. But I don't think it's really that difficult. Like, I don't think Mac Jones is a complete waste. I still believe that he could be a quarterback in the league. We talked about it last pod. You know, confidence is shattered. I don't think he trusts the guys that are out there for the most part. The head coach has embarrassed him, reportedly alienated him. And I think Mac needs to get away. Your commercial, you need to get away? Ding. I think he needs to get away. Like he needs to get away, clear his head, go to Tom House again like he did in 22, or maybe go to somebody else, work on his mechanics, get his feet right, get his mind right, and get away from Bill Belichick. Because I just think those guys are I don't think Mac feels confident. And some of that's on Mac, no doubt, but I do think it's all a part of the story, the last 2.5 years of how he was handled and what was done. And if you think he sucks, fine, okay, opinions are cool. I have them, you have them. But I would just say I don't think he was given a chance to prove to the world that he could be a legitimate starting quarterback in this league by what he was given. So it's unfortunate. It is what it is. He hasn't earned the job for next year. That's how I would roll with it. This episode is brought to you by FanDuel. We'll get to the Colts in a minute. The exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. New customers receive $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 money line bet. All right, quick Colts preview for the people out there, Greg.
So this is a very game Colts squad. I mean, they don't have Anthony Richardson at quarterback. He's out for the year. They have Gardner Minshew, who's, I don't know, he's always one of my favorite players to watch. Like, he just... You never know what you're going to get. That's good and bad. But I think, you know, Shane Steichen, I think, has done a really nice job. I think, you know, you look at, if you put a lot of stock into DVOA, which I do, you know, the Colts are a better team than the Patriots. They're ranked 17th overall, and I think they're 12th in offense, 12th in defense. They're bad on special teams, but so are the Patriots. So I think this is a tough matchup, and I think this is, you know, these... You know, the long plane ride and all this stuff, and it's a little bit longer for the Colts. But, you know, this is when you need a little bit of youth, a little bit in the enthusiasm that, you know, we're going in the right direction. And I think that's more of the Colts than the Patriots. I could see the Patriots laying a big fat egg on Sunday. One thing to watch, and I haven't watched a ton of film on him, but I know that Bernard Raimann, the left tackle for the Colts, according to PFF, he's one of the top left tackles in the league. I find that interesting and noteworthy because guess what? The Colts made him. It wasn't sure. I remember him coming out in the draft in 2022. Weren't sure whether he was sort of a project out of Central Michigan. Weren't sure whether he was going to be a left tackle or right tackle, you know, but looked like a good developmental prospect. You know, the Colts took him in the third round in 2022. And now they have their future left tackle. You know, this is what I've wanted the Patriots to do for a couple years running. And, you know, it just something to note when you're watching this game. good, solid defense. DeForest Buckner is a game wrecker on the interior. Kenny Moore's really good cornerback. I like the weapons on this team. Josh Downs is another young slot jittery guy that I liked in the draft. That'll be interesting to watching him in this game. Taylor, the running back, should get more of a load in this game, Jonathan Taylor. But Moss has also been really good. So they run the ball creatively. The Patriots are pretty good against the run. They got to get the ball, get the game into Minshew's hands and hope he isn't hot. Like he can get hot at times and really rip you up. So I like the Colts in this matchup. They're favored. I like the Colts probably by a touchdown in this game, but I do like, I don't like the over. I like the under with those guys traveling, the legs, the jet lag, all that stuff. I think it's going to be a sleepy game.
Great. I will probably be hungover as shit down here in Virginia Beach. So what I will say is I'm not picking the Patriots the rest of this year. Spite, bitterness, couldn't care less. I'm angry at them. I keep picking them to win games, even against teams that I thought they should beat, like last week against Washington. That's a winnable game. Until they actually start proving it, I'm done. So, and I think the Colts are a tough matchup. So I'm done with picking the Patriots. I'm picking the Colts, lay the 1.5. And I'm going to go with the over, just because this defense is giving up so many chunk plays. I got to believe that the Colts might be able to put up a 24 or 27 spot. So I'll go with the over and I'll go with the Colts. Don't forget, BSJ, $50 for the year. Bedard, Giardi, Corrales, Haggerty, all sorts of stuff happening there. Check them out. BSJ, best sources around, giving the most accurate reporting on your football team, especially with Greg and Mike. All right, we'll see what happens on Sunday morning. Back on early next week to recap things. And hey, the way this thing's going, maybe more drama. We'll talk to you then.
FanDuel is the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 Moneyline bet. FanDuel, official partner of the NFL.